Chapter 3. Purpose. I had an irresistible desire for the voyage, and I told her I thought there was something so uncommon in the impressions I had upon my mind, that it would be a kind of resisting providence if I should attempt to stay at home, after which she ceased her expostulations, and joined with me, not only in making provision for my voyage, but also in settling my family affairs for my absence, and providing for the education of my children. In order to do this, I made my will, and settled the estate I had in such a manner for my children, and placed in such hands, that I was perfectly easy, and satisfied they would of justice done them, whatever might befall me. And for their education, I left it wholly to the widow, with a sufficient maintenance to herself for her care, all which she richly deserved. For no mother could have taken more care in their education, or understood it better, and as she lived till I came home, I also lived to thank her for it. My nephew was ready to sail about the beginning of January 1694-5. And I, with my man Friday, went on board, in the Downs, the 8th, having, besides that sloop which I mentioned above, a very considerable cargo of all kinds of necessary things for my colony, which, if I did not find in good condition, I resolved to leave so. First, I carried with me some servants whom I purposed to place there as inhabitants, or at least to set on work there upon my account while I stayed, and either to leave them there, or carry them forward, as they should appear willing. Particularly, I carried two carpenters, a smith, and a very handy, ingenious fellow, who was a cooper by trade, and was also a general mechanic, for he was dexterous at making wheels, and handmills to grind corn, was a good turner and a good pot maker. He also made anything that was proper to make of earth or of wood. In a word, we called him our jack of all trades. With these I carried a tailor, who had offered himself to go a passenger to the East Indies with my nephew, but afterwards consented to stay on our new plantation, and who proved a most necessary handy fellow as could be desired in many other businesses besides that of his trade. For, as I observed formerly, necessity arms us for all employments. My cargo, as near as I can recollect, for I have not kept account of the particulars, consisted of a sufficient quantity of linen, and some English thin stuffs, for clothing the Spaniards, that I expected to find there, and enough of them, as by my calculation, might comfortably supply them for 7 years. If I remember right, the materials I carried for clothing them, with gloves, hats, shoes, stockings, and all such things as they could want for wearing, amounted to about 200 pounds, including some beds, bedding, and household stuff, particularly kitchen utensils, with pots, kettles, pewter, brass, and semicolon, and near 100 pounds more in ironwork, nails, tools of every kind, staples, hooks, hinges, and every necessary thing I could think of. I carried also 100 spare arms, muskets, and fusees, besides some pistols, a considerable quantity of shot of all sizes, 3 or 4 tons of lead, and 2 pieces of brass cannon, and, because I knew not what time, and what extremities I was providing for, I carried 100 barrels of powder, besides swords, cutlasses, and the iron part of some pikes and halberds. In short, we had a large magazine of all sorts of store, and I made my nephew carry 2 small quarter-deck guns more than he wanted for his ship, to leave behind, if there was occasion, so that when we came there we might build a fort, and man it against all sorts of enemies. Indeed, I at first thought there would be need enough for all, and much more, if we hoped to maintain our possession of the island, as shall be seen in the course of that story. I had not such bad luck in this voyage as I had been used to meet with, and therefore shall have the less occasion to interrupt the reader, who perhaps may be impatient to hear how matters went with my colony. Yet some odd accidents, cross winds and bad weather happened on this first setting out, which made the voyage longer than I expected it at first, and I, who had never made but one voyage, my first voyage to Guinea, in which I might be said to come back again, as the voyage was at first designed, began to think the same ill fate attended me, and that I was born to be never contented with being on shore, and yet to be always unfortunate at sea. Contrary winds first put us to the northward, and we were obliged to put in at Galway, in Ireland, where we lay windbound 22 days. But we had this satisfaction with the disaster, that provisions were here exceeding cheap, and in the utmost plenty, so that while we lay here we never touched the ship's stores, but rather added to them. Here, also, I took in several live hogs, and 2 cows with their calves, which I resolved, if I had a good passage, to put on shore in my island, but we found occasion to dispose otherwise of them. We set out on the 5th of February from Ireland, and had a very fair gale of wind for some days. As I remember, it might be about the 20th of February in the evening late, when the mate, having the watch, came into the round house, and told us he saw a flash of fire, and heard a gun fired. And while he was telling us of it, a boy came in, and told us the boatswain heard another. This made us all run out upon the quarter deck, where for a while we heard nothing, but in a few minutes we saw a very great light, and found that there was some very terrible fire at a distance. Immediately we had recourse to our reckonings, in which we all agreed that there could be no land that way in which the fire showed itself, no, not for 500 leagues, for it appeared at WNW. Upon this, we concluded it must be some ship on fire at sea, and as, by our hearing the noise of guns just before, we concluded that it could not be far off, we stood directly towards it, and were presently satisfied we should discover it, because the further we sailed, the greater the light appeared. Though, the weather being hazy, we could not perceive anything but the light for a while. In about half an hour's sailing, the wind being fair for us, though not much of it, and the weather clearing up a little, we could plainly discern that it was a great ship on fire in the middle of the sea. I was most sensibly touched with this disaster, though not at all acquainted with the persons engaged in it. I presently recollected my former circumstances, and what condition I was in when taken up by the Portuguese captain, and how much more deplorable the circumstances of the poor creatures belonging to that ship must be, if they had no other ship in company with them. Upon this I immediately ordered that 5 guns should be fired, one soon after another, that, if possible, we might give notice to them that there was help for them at hand, and that they might endeavor to save themselves in their boat. For though we could see the flames of the ship, yet they, it being night, could see nothing of us. We lay by some time upon this, only driving as the burning ship drove, waiting for daylight, when, on a sudden, to our great terror, though we had reason to expect it, the ship blew up in the air, and in a few minutes all the fire was out, that is to say, the rest of the ship sunk. This was a terrible, and indeed an afflicting sight, for the sake of the poor men, who, I concluded, must be either all destroyed in the ship, or be in the utmost distress in their boat, in the middle of the ocean, which, at present, as it was dark, I could not see. However, to direct them as well as I could, I caused lights to be hung out in all parts of the ship where we could, and which we had lanterns for, and kept firing guns all the night long, letting them know by this that there was a ship not far off. About 8 o'clock in the morning we discovered the ship's boats by the help of our perspective glasses, and found there were 2 of them, both thronged with people, and deep in the water. We perceived they rowed, the wind being against them, that they saw our ship, and did their utmost to make us see them. We immediately spread our ancient, to let them know we saw them, and hung a waft out, as a signal for them to come on board, and then made more sail, standing directly to them. In little more than half an hour we came up with them, and took them all in, being no less than 64 men, women, and children, for there were a great many passengers. Upon inquiry we found it was a French merchant ship of 300 tons, homebound from Quebec. The master gave us a long account of the distress of his ship, how the fire began in the steerage by the negligence of the steersman, which, on his crying out for help, was, as everybody thought, entirely put out. But they soon found that some sparks of the first fire had got into some part of the ship so difficult to come at, that they could not effectually quench it, and afterwards getting in between the timbers, and within the ceiling of the ship, it proceeded into the hold, and mastered all the skill and all the application they were able to exert. They had no more to do then, but to get into their boats, which, to their great comfort, were pretty large, being their long boat, and a great shallop, besides a small skiff, which was of no great service to them, other than to get some fresh water and provisions into her, after they had secured their lives from the fire. They had, indeed, small hopes of their lives, by getting into these boats at that distance from any land. Only, as they said, that they thus escaped from the fire, and there was a possibility that some ship might happen to be at sea, and might take them in. They had sails, oars, and a compass, and had as much provision and water as, with sparing it so as to be next door to starving, might support them about 12 days, in which, if they had no bad weather, and no contrary winds, the captain said he hoped he might get to the banks of Newfoundland, and might perhaps take some fish, to sustain them till they might go on shore. But there were so many chances against them in all these cases, such as storms, to overset and founder them, rains and cold, to bend them and perish their limbs, contrary winds, to keep them out and starve them, that it must have been next to miraculous, if they had escaped. In the midst of their consternation, everyone being hopeless and ready to despair, the captain, with tears in his eyes, told me they were on a sudden surprised with the joy of hearing a gun fire, and after that four more. These were the 5 guns which I caused to be fired at first seeing the light. This revived their hearts, and gave them the notice, which, as above, I desired it should, that there was a ship at hand for their help. It was upon the hearing of these guns, that they took down their masts and sails. The sound coming from the windward, they resolved to lie by till morning. Some time after this, hearing no more guns, they fired 3 muskets, one a considerable while after another. But these, the wind being contrary, we never heard. Some time after that again they were still more agreeably surprised with seeing our lights, and hearing the guns, which, as I have said, I caused to be fired all the rest of the night. This set them to work with their oars, to keep their boats ahead, at least that we might the sooner come up with them. And at last, to their inexpressible joy, they found we saw them. It is impossible for me to express the several gestures, the strange ecstasies, the variety of postures which these poor delivered people ran into, to express the joy of their souls at so unexpected a deliverance. Grief and fear are easily described. Sighs, tears, groans, and a very few motions of the head and hands, make up the sum of its variety. But an excess of joy, a surprise of joy, has 1,000 extravagances in it. There were some in tears, some raging and tearing themselves, as if they had been in the greatest agonies of sorrow, some stark raving and downright lunatic, some ran about the ship stamping with their feet, others wringing their hands, some were dancing, some singing, some laughing, more crying, many quite dumb, not able to speak a word. Others sick and vomiting, several swooning and ready to faint, and a few were crossing themselves and giving God thanks. I would not wrong them either, there might be many that were thankful afterwards, but the passion was too strong for them at first, and they were not able to master it. Then were thrown into ecstasies, and a kind of frenzy, and it was but a very few that were composed, and serious in their joy. Perhaps also, the case may have some addition to it from the particular circumstance of that nation they belong to. I mean the French, whose temper is allowed to be more volatile, more passionate, and more sprightly, and their spirits more fluid than in other nations. I am not philosopher enough to determine the cause, but nothing I had ever seen before came up to it. The ecstasy's poor Friday, my trusty Savage, was in when he found his father in the boat came the nearest to it, and the surprise of the master and his two companions, whom I delivered from the villains that set them on shore in the island, came a little way towards it, but nothing was to compare to this, either that I saw in Friday, or anywhere else in my life. It is further observable that these extravagances did not show themselves in that different manner I have mentioned, in different persons only, but all the variety would appear, in a short succession of moments, in one and the same person. A man that we saw this minute dumb, and, as it were, stupid and confounded, would the next minute be dancing and hallooing like an antic, and the next moment be tearing his hair, or pulling his clothes to pieces, and stamping them under his feet like a madman. In a few moments after, that we would have him all in tears, then sick, swooning, and, had not immediate help been had, he would in a few moments have been dead. Thus it was, not with one or two, or 10 or 20, but with the greatest part of them. And, if I remember right, our surgeon was obliged to let blood of about 30 persons. There were two priests among them, one an old man, and the other a young man, and that which was strangest was, the oldest man was the worst. As soon as he set his foot on board our ship, and saw himself safe, he dropped down stone dead to all appearance. Not the least sign of life could be perceived in him. Our surgeon immediately applied proper remedies to recover him, and was the only man in the ship that believed he was not dead. At length he opened a vein in his arm, having first chafed and rubbed the part, so as to warm it as much as possible. Upon this the blood, which only dropped at first, flowing freely, in 3 minutes after the man opened his eyes, a quarter of an hour after that he spoke, grew better, and after the blood was stopped, he walked about, told us he was perfectly well, and took a dram of cordial which the surgeon gave him. About a quarter of an hour after this, they came running into the cabin to the surgeon, who was bleeding a Frenchwoman that had fainted, and told him the priest was gone stark mad. It seems he had begun to revolve the change of his circumstances in his mind, and again this put him into an ecstasy of joy. His spirits whirled about faster than the vessels could convey them, the blood grew hot and feverish, and the man was as fit for bedlam as any creature that ever was in it. The surgeon would not bleed him again in that condition, but gave him something to doze and put him to sleep, which, after some time, operated upon him, and he awoke next morning perfectly composed and well. The younger priest behaved with great command of his passions, and was really an example of a serious, well-governed mind. At his first coming on board the ship he threw himself flat on his face, prostrating himself in thankfulness for his deliverance, in which I unhappily and unseasonably disturbed him, really thinking he had been in a swoon. But he spoke calmly, thanked me, told me he was giving God thanks for his deliverance, begged me to leave him a few moments, and that, next to his Maker, he would give me thanks also. I was heartily sorry that I disturbed him, and not only left him, but kept others from interrupting him also. He continued in that posture about 3 minutes, or little more, after I left him, then came to me, as he had said he would, and with a great deal of seriousness and affection, but with tears in his eyes, thanked me that had, under God, given him and so many miserable creatures their lives. I told him I had no need to tell him to thank God for it, rather than me, for I had seen that he had done that already. But I added that it was nothing but what reason and humanity dictated to all men, and that we had as much reason as he to give thanks to God, who had blessed us so far as to make us the instruments of his mercy to so many of his creatures. After this the young priest applied himself to his countrymen, and labored to compose them. He persuaded, entreated, argued, reasoned with them, and did his utmost to keep them within the exercise of their reason, and with some he had success, though others were for a time out of all government of themselves. I cannot help committing this to writing, as perhaps it may be useful to those into whose hands it may fall, for guiding themselves in the extravagances of their passions. For if an excess of joy can carry men out to such a length beyond the reach of their reason, what will not the extravagances of anger, rage, and a provoked mind carry us to? And, indeed, here I saw reason for Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.